Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Lawrence Holmes here with you until 10 o'clock tonight. There's been a lot of talk over the last couple of days about the draft and Mitchell Trubisky and what Ryan Pace is doing. So I thought that I would bring in someone who has actually done some legwork on this. And to talk about this, I wanted to bring in my friend Emily Kaplan, who writes for themmqb.com. She joins me now here in studio, which is great. How are you?
I'm great. It's just great to look into your eyes and be here. I'm great.
All right. So that was really nice. So we have a previous working relationship from when we both used to be over at 120, and you used to come on every week and give us scoopage. So it's nice to get you in here when I can get scoopage about the Bears.
Yeah. Let's talk about it.
All right. So let's get into this. How did you go about talking with the Trubisky camp about what happened in the draft?
Sure. Well, it definitely helped because for the MMQB this year, I wrote a college column. So I actually profiled Mitchell Trubisky, and I'm saying Mitchell, guys, he really doesn't care if it's Mitch or Mitchell. It could go either way. But in November, it was right after Thanksgiving. It might have even been early December. So I had a lot of contact information and kind of built a couple of relationships with people that he knew. And so when he got drafted to the Bears that night, I think I was as shocked as everybody. And I was like, okay. I told my editors, I think I maybe can get some ground here because I've been in Chicago for more than a year. I know a little bit about, you know, what was going on with the Bears. And I think I can kind of connect some dots.
What was the most interesting thing about that move from your perspective and from what people around the league told you?
Yeah, I think everyone was, you know, maybe the next day they were talking about, okay, did Ryan Pace leave John Fox in the dark? You know, is there some discord here? But what I found interesting is they left Mitchell Trubisky totally in the dark. I love the way he described it. They went down and worked him out. Like, Mitch Trubisky did a great job of keeping this under wraps. They went down to North Carolina. They had what Mitch Trubisky described as the best first date ever. They went to this romantic steakhouse, dim lights, John Fox looking over a 200-bottle wine list. And he's like, we're really clicking. It's great. And then they ghosted him. And he didn't hear from them since. He didn't even hear from them before he was drafted. Ryan Pace called him after Roger Goodell said his name.
That's really interesting because there's some talk that John Fox didn't know until about an hour before the draft that that's what they were going to do. That's really keeping a tight lip on things.
Sure. And look, I think that John Fox, you can debate. I think there's no one who knows what John Fox knew and when, except for a select few people in Hallis Hall. But he definitely was aware they were looking at these quarterbacks hard. I mean, you saw him go to Clemson's pro day and talk to Dabo Swinney almost the entire time. If they go there and not only take him out to dinner for Mitch Trubisky and work him out, he's aware and probably signed off on him to Ryan Pace saying, if you draft him, I'm comfortable with him.
In your piece in the MMQB about this, you went through what I think a lot of Bears fans and people who are following the Bears worry about with Trubisky. He didn't really play in a pro-style offense. How did the Bears work him out to figure out if he'd be a good fit?
Yeah, so they had all of his receivers there from UNC, including Ryan Switzer, who was drafted by the Cowboys in the fourth round. They had Mitchell Trubisky center there. This kid, his last name is Crowley. I think it's Lucas Crowley. And they made him take snaps under center, and they made him take those drops, 3-5, 7-step drops. It had a really detailed game plan that they had. It was a 90-minute script. And Trubisky said they were hard on him. They were coaching him like he was already on the team. So they really did like what they saw that day, apparently.
It's good, though, because it's one of the biggest questions, whenever you're talking about quarterbacks that come out of spread offenses, and I mean, you've been covering this for a few years, you worry if they can make that transition to playing under center. Not that, you know, teams are moving away There's a lot more shotgun and pistol offenses, but you still occasionally have to find yourself underneath center.
There's nothing more frustrating when you go to watch an NFL game on Sunday and say, you know, it's the next week, and you watch a football game for college, and every single kid is, like, about to take the snap, and they all crane their necks to the sideline, and it just looks ridiculous. But they're not asked to command these things. But what Mitch's quarterback coach told me, Coach Heckendorf at UNC, said, every time I got a call from an NFL scout or an NFL coach, the first thing they said to me is, you know, we thought you were a basic spread offense, but when we started watching more of your film, we realized that you do more pro-style things than we thought. You have a lot of full reads, and that's why I think so many people were talking about Mitchell Trubisky as a player who could start right away in the NFL.
So it isn't just one read throw to the open guy. He has to kind of survey the field a little bit, even though he's getting stuff from the sidelines.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes sense. Emily Kaplan here with me, talking Bears and Mitchell Trubisky. I really implore you to read her piece on the MMQB.com about the Bears and the drafting of Mitchell Trubisky. What's he like?
He's quiet. He's a really big family guy. When I profiled him back in December, November, whenever it was, I learned that he has like 30 cousins all in the Northeast Ohio area. He's really, really close to his family and his siblings. They play Pictionary together. They go on long car rides to go visit his grandma in Florida. He's a little bit of a homebody. Like, he was really homesick when he first got to UNC. Obviously, this is, you know, a couple years ago. He's matured. I'm not trying to say that it's going to be like that here, but he's really a non-assuming guy.
How does Mr. Ohio football not end up at Ohio State?
Yeah, he really wanted to go there, and they actually did make him an offer. And I think it was JT Barrett accepted first, right before him. And then he wanted to go to, I believe it was Michigan State, and somebody accepted right before him, and he just kind of kept getting hard luck. So he actually was a really high-profile recruit. Like you said, he was Mr. Ohio. But the other funny thing is the reason he got recruited to UNC is UNC, the offensive coordinator there at the time, Coach Anderson, never really recruited up north, and he kept hearing these good words about this quarterback in Ohio. Well, that quarterback was DeShone Kizer. So he went up to go recruit DeShone Kizer, and all the coaches were talking about this other guy also, Mitch Trubisky, and that's how we came across him.
Wow. So he ends up going down to ACC country. Was there any sort of like culture shock for him to go down the Tobacco Road?
I think so, and I think just the biggest thing was being, like I said, away from his family. It's a beautiful school. That was my dream school. I'm not going to lie. I was waitlisted. I still harbor a little resentment. I'm wearing light blue now, but yeah,
can I get upset. And we'll get back to that, but can I just tell you that I have harsh feelings about some stuff from I mean, now we're talking about, I'm, what, 41?
Yeah.
So now we're
you
talking
still remember
about,
it, right?
Oh, I remember everything.
Yeah.
I remember getting into Yale and not getting into Georgia.
This is the best humble brag of all time.
How does that happen? How does one get into Yale but not into Georgia?
What did Georgia say?
I truly believe that they didn't want any more out-of-state people.
That's hilarious.
That's how I justify it in my mind.
Usually they want all... Now I'm going to get you angrier. Usually they want your out-of-state tuition.
You would think
that
that's what they wanted, but they didn't.
Anyways.
I joked with a buddy of mine here that had I gone to Yale, which I was never going to do, it was a dare. My father and I had a bet. Mm-hmm. He bet me the application fee, which at the time was like $100.
Which is a lot.
And that was 1993. Okay.
Holy cow. Yeah.
So that was a lot of money. He bet me that I could get in, and I was like, there's no way I'm getting in. I got in. So he paid for it, and it was all good. But had I gone to Yale, I could have been classmates with Theo Epstein.
Can you imagine?
I could imagine being in charge of broadcast for the Cubs right now.
Heck, man, he would have been so impressed with you. You would have been in the front office right now.
It would have been great. It would have been great. Anyway, so North Carolina was your school. They waitlisted you, and you were not happy about it.
Nah.
But
for Mitchell Trubisky, it was a great school for him. And even though he didn't play there right away, he didn't play the second year. They redshirted him the first year, the second and third year. He lost out to Marquise Williams, but he didn't transfer. And I think that does say something about him.
It's a concern of mine. Why didn't he beat out Marquise Williams, who was a decent player, but now is nowheresville as far as the NFL goes? How did he explain that?
The coaches there explain it. You'll hear some talk about it and say, look, maybe we should have put Mitchell Trubisky in sooner. Maybe, you know, it was just seniority. You hear some rumors that it was politics and recruiting. I don't really know what happened. I think sometimes even maybe guys are late bloomers, and Mitchell Trubisky didn't quite come out to the quarterback that he is until that third or fourth year. But when you say that he's such a good college quarterback and he's nothing now in the NFL, I think that's just something that frustrates me, because there's just such a difference between what makes a really good college quarterback and what makes a good NFL quarterback. I'm like, I get killed, you know, when people start talking about next year's draft and they're like, you didn't include Baker Mayfield in your prospects. And I'm like, Baker Mayfield is an awesome college quarterback. He's like 5'10" and scrambles around like there, like he thinks he's Johnny Manziel. He's probably not an NFL quarterback.
It frustrates me that people are already talking about next year's quarterback class. Like, oh, if you didn't get one this year, that's fine, because Sam Darnold, I don't know what Sam Darnold's going to be this upcoming year.
Do you know what's crazy? Is this time last year, I kid you not, every single person was saying, is it going to be Deshaun Watson or Brad Kaya for the number one pick? Like, that's how crazy this stuff is. So when you talk about Sam Darnold and Sam Rosen and Josh Allen, I'm guaranteeing you one of those guys is going to fall off.
Well, and I remember if we go back to the beginning of the season and probably after week one of the college football season, Deshaun Kizer.
Sure.
As the number one pick in the draft. And you saw where he ended up. It's such an inexact science. But when you talked with John Fox about Mitchell Trubisky, he told you what he liked, even though he was behind Williams, that when he came in the game, he made things happen, right?
Yeah, that's something Ryan Pace said.
It's Ryan Pace.
You know, he watched all the snaps that he took, and obviously there's limited snaps. He only played 13 games, but he did play. He started 13 games, but he played before that, and he watched all the snaps and said when he went in, something positive happened. Something I do think is ironic, though, and I don't know if anyone's brought this up, but the big knock on Mitchell Trubisky, right, is that he doesn't have experience. Well, now they want him to sit even more. Like, it does seem kind of counterintuitive, though, no?
How do you think he's going to handle having to sit? Because he, you know, 8-5, had an opportunity to play, now finds himself the number two pick in the draft. But here's Mike Glennon, who the Bears have given at least a year-long commitment to with big dollars attached to it. How do you think Trubisky handles that?
I think Trubisky handles it fine. I think that he's going into this with the right mindset of saying, everything since December has been a whirlwind. You know, no one was talking about me at this time last year. I started getting talked about as, you know, the next best thing. And now I'm, you know, in a really great position, the number two pick in the draft. But if they want me to sit, that's fine. I worry about how Ryan Pace and John Fox handle this, because how many times have we heard teams say, well, we think it's best to sit our quarterback. It worked well for Aaron Rodgers. Look what the Packers did. And then they just reverse course out of desperation. Like Blake Bortles in Jacksonville is the example that comes to mind. They wanted to sit him that whole year. They thrust him out there before he was ready. And a couple years later, his mechanics are all out of whack.
Well, you're someone who writes nationally, and we've seen a lot of people have thoughts on what the Bears are doing. What are people around the NFL telling you about what the Bears have done?
Well, I did have that one quote in it. It was pretty high in the story, and it was from a pretty high-ranking AFC personnel guy. He's a pretty big decision-maker for his team, and he said, look, Ryan Pace is a really well-respected evaluator around this league. You know, I expected this to be a pretty, you know, regular draft for him, and what he did was totally against the grain. And I'm not necessarily saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying I have no idea what is going on in Chicago. So I think people are pretty surprised.
I'm starting to also think about the relationship between Fox and Pace. And I don't mean like they're not going to talk to each other. Just that it feels like to me, and you can tell me if from looking at this from maybe with a clearer view, it feels like to me ownership has given Pace a mandate to say, you got some time. We want to get this done correctly. We don't necessarily want it just done fast. We want it done right. And it feels like you have a GM and a head coach that are on different timelines. Because if you're John Fox, you're 9-23. You want to win right now. You're coming off a 3-win season and you're in your 60s.
I think what it does, and I think you're completely spot on here, is it makes John Fox's seat hotter than Ryan Pace's. And when you look at what Ryan Pace has done, just besides Trubisky, okay, he signed more free agents than any other team in the league, 12, but these are all middle-of-the-road free agents. And he's just sticking darts out there and saying, let's see what sticks. These are just patching up my roster. Meanwhile, the other four picks after Trubisky, three of these guys have not played above the FBS level. And the fourth is a kid, Eddie Jackson, who broke his leg last year and missed 7 games. I think it was 11 games, actually. It was a lot of games. So this, to me, looks like a roster that's not ready to win this year, but it's ready to win next year, maybe, or even the year after that. Because Adam Shaheen, he's a great kid, but he's not going to upseat Zach Miller next year. But Zach Miller is on a contract, so he can beat him out the next year. So I see this as Ryan Pace. Yeah. He's looking in 2018 and 2019 and saying, I think we can show enough progress. Meanwhile, that kind of screws over John Fox, who might need a win this year and doesn't get to use the number three pick or number two pick at his disposal.
We're all trying to figure out if John Lynch got the better of Ryan Pace. What are folks around the league telling you about how that whole thing happened?
Have you ever seen a rookie GM, by the way, just like walk out on top like that?
With a whole bunch of trades and the players that he supposedly wanted. And
right. This is what I think people are saying. I think they're saying, they firstly are commending John Lynch. I'm like crazy. Like Lynch walked out like a king. And they're saying, though, I get what where Ryan Pace was coming from, because even if he felt a tiny bit of pressure behind him of saying someone could come up at number two, if you have conviction about someone, you should just go for it. And Ryan Pace, for the first time, I think, in his tenure as a Chicago GM, has shown tremendous conviction. So I think people are praising him for that. It was a ballsy move, and maybe he gave up a little too much, but at least he showed some direction.
Besides all of the things that you learned about what Mitchell Trubisky was doing to prepare himself for this and how the Bears tried to prepare him, what other interesting things are there about Mitchell Trubisky that Bears fans may like or maybe not like? Can he make biscuits?
That's the big question you and I were talking about. And I think my next follow-up story is inviting him to the test kitchen here. And
yes!
Saying, can you make some biscuits? I think they're going to like about him is that he's a team guy. Like, guys around him really like playing for him. I think, you know, he won over a locker room in North Carolina. I think he'll win over here. I think they might get frustrated because maybe they want a little bit more of a personality. And he's just, I can't explain it, but just his general disposition, he's just a nice guy. So we'll see.
When the Bears signed Mike Glennon in the offseason, what did you think of it?
It's funny because I think my thoughts on that are kind of what I think about Trubisky is, hey, I'm totally fine if you've set your eyes on this guy and you have conviction that he should be the starter. But was anyone else bidding against you, or did you just totally give them this huge contract right off the bat? And I'm not quite sure. So I think that kind of mirrors what I think with Trubisky is that I'm totally fine with you taking him. I just wonder, was there anyone else really behind you trying to, you know, get right up there at number two?
It's a good question. Now, I'm going to make you uncomfortable. I'm talking with Emily Kaplan.
Let's go.
Of the MMQB.com. How did you get to where you're at?
No, I love it.
Because here's the thing. I don't want to blow up your spot like Peter King did, but you're really young.
I am young. I'll tell you how young I am. I just had a phone call with my mom yesterday. I'm getting kicked off the insurance this week. I turned 26.
Right?
Yeah. It's like, Mom, no. No.
So I have a lot of, you know, I teach and people sometimes tweet me and say, you know, I'm young and I'm hungry. Like, how do I get in the business? I actually used you as an example in my class the other day, saying to my students, like, it can happen, but you better be on your stuff. So how does one get to this point in their career at 25?
A little bit of luck, a lot of hard work. But look, I knew I wanted to be a journalist from a really young age. I was that weirdo who like put that as their career path when they were six, like sports journalist. I want to have a golden retriever and cover sports. So I wrote for my hometown paper, the Montclair Times in New Jersey. It was a weekly. I was like, I don't know, I was like 13 or 14 years old. And Peter King lived in my town. I was under 18, so they could only pay me like $7 an article. It was definitely illegal. But he found out how old I was. And he wrote me this letter in the mail, which I still have today. And it said, hey, kid, never had as many bylines this age. Keep it up. And I kept that letter, and it meant something to me. So Peter stayed a mentor for me. And when I went to Penn State, where I went because UNC rudely waitlisted me, and so I settled on that. Look, I call myself the Forrest Gump of journalism. Wherever I go, big things happen. So the Jerry Sandusky scandal broke there, and Peter's advice to me was great and said, you should spend 1 year in the newspaper, 1 year in the TV station, and 1 year in the radio station and get a little experience of everything. And I'm like, awesome, Peter, I'm just going to write. So I actually was a intern for the Associated Press. I was a stringer. And when the Sandusky scandal broke, they put me on some really big assignments. I was the first person to knock on Joe Paterno's door when he was fired. The editor, a national editor, was on the phone with me giving me lessons about how not to get arrested for trespassing. I called in the quote to the AP. It was in the next day's story. So I had a bunch of experiences like that where – and I guess the point I'm trying to get across is, you know, take all the experiences that you can get, you know, freelance, even if you're getting $7 an article, or, you know, take an internship in college. And after college, too, I had an internship with the Boston Globe, and then I ended up at at Sports Illustrated. Peter King had a site there and gave me some opportunities to write.
Was sports always on the docket for you, or were you thinking hard news?
No, always sports. I was like, okay, now we're getting real uncomfortable here. I'm a middle child. I have the worst middle child complex, and I'm one of three girls. And this inherently was the way to get closer to my father. I always thought he hated me. And so we would watch, like, New York Rangers games together. Hockey was big, baseball, football. So it was always sports.
Wow. I'm fascinated. I tell people about you, and I go, you guys don't understand. Like your first graph on the story on Trubisky, I was talking with my
boss.
Sounds
like a romance novel, to be honest.
No, but I mean, look, on a cool night in mid-March, Mitchell Trubisky parked his beige 1997 Toyota Camry in the lot of Ben 54, Chapel Hill's swankiest steakhouse. Right? I'm there. Like, as a reader, I am there. And you keep it 100 when you talk about ghosting.
I'm so happy that my editor kept in that reference. I thought he was going to take it out.
Did you?
Oh, my God. I texted him this morning. I'm like, you kept it in.
I like that. But
yeah.
See, I think that's something that we need. We need writers that are going to take us there. And I think you do a really, really wonderful job of doing it, which is why I love, like, introducing you to my listener. Mm-hmm. You know, because they're reading your stuff and they hear the name, and now – you know, they can get an idea of what you're about a little bit. And the fact that you're stationed in Chicago, this is big. You know, I know you're traveling all over the country, but you being here is a very, very cool thing, I think, for Bears fans, because I know that you're going to give 100% on any assignment that you have going there.
Well, I appreciate that. I know you have such a loyal fan base, and I just hope that none of them are in the UNC's admissions department, or once were, because I have talked so much not good stuff about you guys, but
we are not getting into grad school at UNC. I think
UNC,
that's what's
and
going
Yale
on.
Are, yeah, we're
they're
blacklisted.
No,
let alone
out.
Georgia, they still don't like you for whatever reason.
Yeah, Athens. I'm not putting up with that. What's coming up for you? What's the next thing that you want to do?
Yeah, I've got a couple stories because, like I said, I did this college column this year, and then it got right up into the draft. But I don't want to give any away, but
okay. Yeah.
There's one that's a kind of a long form story. It's a big national story. I'm going to tease it. That happened like a decade ago, and I want to revisit it and see how the main players have kind of handled it. That is such a bad teaser. I feel like I gave you guys nothing.
No, that's okay. We'll be looking for it.
TheMMQB.com,
where
exactly.
We can find you. Where can folks find you on social media?
So there's a lot of Emily Kaplans in the world. So I'm Emily M. Kaplan. M as in mom in the middle. It's Madeline. Funny story. I'll tell you my one last funny story. When I hated my middle name. It's Madeline. I don't know why I didn't like it. So when I applied to Penn State, I just put it blank. And Penn State, there's so many students that everyone gets this, like, very generic email address. So my email address there was EXK. And I would tell everyone that it was, like, Xena or, like.
Nice.
Yeah. So, but it's Madeline, everyone. But Emily M. Kaplan on Twitter. And Lawrence, I really appreciate this. This was fun.
No, thank you very much, because I really do think that you're the goods. And I'm glad that I know you. And I'm glad that I get to be like, I knew Emily when she was just starting out getting them checks. And now she got a Pulitzer. So I'm going to be watching your career from afar going, man, I wish I was that talented when I was that young. Thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Emily Kaplan of the MMQB.com. You should read her work. She is terrific. Back after this on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Before we get back to boxing, I want to tell you this. Chicago Baseball Game Day schedule is presented by 24/7 Diabetic Health Hotline. Cubs lost to the Yankees today. The White Sox are losing late in Baltimore to the Orioles. That's today's Chicago baseball schedule, brought to you by 24/7 Diabetic Health Hotline. Attention diabetics, with insurance, you may qualify to get your testing supplies at little or no out-of-pocket cost. Call 800-808-5181. I'm doing the show from Las Vegas, and quite honestly, I'm a little surprised that my next guest is not here with me in Vegas, but, you know, he's out there selling houses and making deals back in Chicago, so I get it. But this fight between Canelo Alvarez and Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., it's tomorrow on HBO pay-per-view. It's been a blast being out here for the last 3 days getting ready for this fight, but I wanted to get some expertise, a guy that has been there, a guy that has been in the ring, a guy who understands what big fights are all about. I have David Diaz's number in my phone, so I was like, I'm going to talk to a guy who's worn a championship belt, the Golden Glove champion, the 1996 Olympian, the WBC lightweight champion. Now joining me here on The Score, David Diaz. What's up, my man?
How you doing, sir? How you been? How you enjoying Vegas?
I'm loving it so far. I'm having a really good time. It's been cool to kind of see this fight. As the days have gone on, more and more people have come into town, and it's getting bigger and bigger. So I'd love to know from your perspective, what does this fight mean? Canelo and Chavez Jr. fighting on Cinco de Mayo weekend.
It's great for the Mexican boxing fans, because it's going to be a lot of national pride in it. You have the people that love Canelo, his style of fighting, his persona, the way he carries himself, and then you have the people that, to an extent, like Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., but really like where he comes from, which is his dad, and also for some people that really want to see Julio Cesar Chavez break out of that shadow of his dad's, you know. So I think it's going to be a great fight.
Let's talk about in the ring, because I wanted to find out, as a tactician, how you would break down each fighter. Let's start with Canelo. What are his strengths and what are his weaknesses?
Canelo's strengths are really more about his fast combinations, his throwing punches, you know. But I feel where Canelo lacks is his conditioning for the later rounds of the round. I think if Chavez Jr. Gives him a dogfight the first 5 rounds, later on in the later rounds, I think it's going to be a great outcome for Jr.
So what's Chavez Jr. like as a fighter?
As a fighter, he's a tough as nails. He's when he's on point and when he's in shape. Obviously, we've seen some fights where you know, obviously he didn't look good and he didn't train properly. I actually, like I said this before, I think this is a perfect fight for him to get up for the fight. I mean, it's where he can cement himself and say, you know, I'm not the son of Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. anymore. I'm my own man in defeating Canelo.
He made weight. He was even a half a pound under the weight.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, though, he looked gaunt and skinny and everything else. You've had to cut weight to make fights. How
yes.
difficult is that process?
It's very difficult, especially when it's difficult to get even around that area where you have to, like, really drain yourself. I hope he didn't drain himself. It's going to be a little bit difficult for him to rehydrate, I believe, because of a clause. He cannot gain no more than 10 pounds, I believe, in that on the next day. So it's going to be a little bit difficult. He's got to hydrate himself up safely, obviously, and with good Pedialyte, you know, and just try to come out there and do his work.
How could that affect him if he doesn't get enough hydration between now and fight time? Where would you see that affect him in the ring?
Oh, definitely where I want him to come out the most in the later rounds. He will not make it to the deep end if he doesn't properly hydrate himself for this fight tomorrow. He will not. It would come back to haunt him real bad. But I honestly, yes, he does look drained. I mean, a little bit skinny in the sense. But I still think he didn't look palish to me, is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
When you really look like pale, It's like when that's been a bad, it's been bad on you. He didn't look that way to me.
Okay. All right. So how difficult do you think, because you brought it up earlier, talking about Chavez Jr. growing up in the shadow of his father. How difficult do you think that was for him?
Oh, very difficult. But you got to also understand, too, Chavez Jr. didn't have no amateur background. So he was he had everything against him. Everything against him for it to not to go right for him. But he ended up doing it. He ended up fighting and fighting the right fights. And sometimes there were some hard fights, unnecessary fights he shouldn't have took. But he's at a place right now where he can correct all of that by winning this fight.
These two guys don't seem to like each other. Have you heard anything about their relationship or lack thereof?
Yeah, no love whatsoever. None. And it's because when Chavez Jr. was first starting off and Canelo was starting off, I guess Canelo said, hey, let's get this fight going. And I guess Chavez Jr. said no or just didn't pay no mind to it. And that has been boiling up ever since, which is great for everybody else because at that time, right, it probably would have been an easier fight for Canelo than for Chavez, definitely harder for Chavez because, again, I go back to Canelo has had a little bit of amateur experience. He turned pro probably at a very young age. I think it was 15 or 16. And Chavez Jr. just started turning pro and was just learning. So he would have definitely been on the short end of the stick in that fight. Now, I think with Chavez's experience that he's gone through, learning, I think it's a great fight. I think it's a great fight, and we're going to get a great war.
Who was the guy that you hated? Like, not just you wanted to beat him, but you hated when you were in the ring.
To be honest with you, I mean, I never had that mentality. My mentality was more about winning and beating him. Didn't have to be a dislike in sense. I to be honest with you, man, I never got to that point because I think that clouds your vision and what you want to do in the ring. I could never hate anybody, but I did want to beat up people.
Well, I mean, you're just such a sweetheart. That's why it is, man. You don't have a lot of beef with people. So they also know they'll get them hands if they mess with David Diaz, and they definitely don't want that. Talking with a former WBC lightweight world champion, 96 Olympian, Golden Gloves champ, David Diaz here on The Score. This fight, there are a couple fights that I really want to see. And I want to see Canelo Triple G if he makes it out of this fight for sure. What are his chances, in your opinion, of winning this fight? And would you want to see the Canelo Triple G fight?
Oh, I definitely would love to see the Canelo Triple G fight. If this happens that Canelo does beat Chavez, that should be mandatory fight, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You know, that would be a great fight as well. But I honestly feel that Chavez is going to surprise people for this fight. I just have a feeling that Chavez finally got woke up and said, you know what, this is where I make my mark. This is where I come out of my dad's shadow as Julio Cesar Chavez, the new Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. Not the one that fought and had his dad's stamp on it and all that. I think this is the fight where he shows his true grit, and this is going to be a great delight to a lot of people.
The fight is going to be on HBO. You can check it out, HBO pay-per-view tomorrow. We're here actually at the site where Canelo and Chavez Jr. are going to fight, and we thank HBO for bringing us out here. Was Chavez Sr. a hero for you, David?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, without a doubt. Yes, sir. Always.
What did you love about him?
Huh?
What did you love about him?
Oh, my God. The way he fought, always going forward, precise punches to the body. And that was his forte, always going to the body, making sure these guys would get weak in the legs and then just finish them up on top. And it was just like a family affair. Boxing for my family is just a family affair. We all get together. But when Chavez Jr. was like everybody here in the United States, Mexicans in Mexico, everybody was happy. So, you know, it was a great feeling of watching him fight.
I saw him come into the – I'm in a little media center, it's Radio Row, and he walked in, and, I mean, you couldn't – I couldn't help but think, man, that dude is boxing royalty. And just yes. the way that fans treat him, you can see it.
Yes. And the good thing about it is that he's genuine with the people, you know. From what I've seen, from what I've encountered, he's always been a great guy to everybody here. Never denies a picture, you know. So, I mean, he's a great guy.
David, I really appreciate you jumping on. I know it was last minute, but I was like, man, I got to get your input on this fight.
No, thank you. Always, thank you so much, Lawrence, for always thinking about me, and I appreciate it, man.
We got to get you in studio again soon.
Yes, sir. Sounds good.
Be well, my
enjoy,
man.
Enjoy, and bet on Chavez Jr. for me. All right.
I'm gonna go right over to the sports book and I'm gonna bet on Chavez Jr. for you.
All right, brother. I appreciate it.
All right, my man, David Diaz. He is the good. When we had him in studio for an hour, he was just so tremendous. I remember I met him at a charity event, and we were just talking and just talking boxing with him and all the history. Good dude. We need another visit from David Diaz soon. Okay, that'll wrap it up for the shows that we've done here for the last couple of days. This has been a lot of fun. Oh, wait, Eli, kill the music for a second. Kill it. You know why? Because we got to talk about fish. That's right. We got to talk about getting you some fish. You need some fish? You need some fish whose names you can't pronounce? Then you need to get over to Oak Park Natural. I can't pronounce these names. Cyphal tilapia frontosa. Okay, that I think I got that one right. But there's also other names on here that I can't say, and I'm not going to try to. But I can tell you this much. 20% off all saltwater fish. 20% off all freshwater fish. 20% off all African cichlids. 20% off all plecostomus fish. 20% off all live coral. All live rock. You can get your afterglow on because all glow fish are also 20% off. Why not sashay into Oak Park Natural Pet? Whether you're looking for a Maxima clam or a powder blue tang is for the children, y'all. No worries, Scott has got you covered. The Oak Park Natural Pet, check them out. They're great. I have actually been to this place and they are so sweet, and they will help you get everything that you need on Harlem, just north of Madison and Oak Park. Oak Park Natural Pet, where you always find more fish. Hit it, Eli. Okay, lots of thank yous to give out for this broadcast. Big thank you to HBO for bringing us out here for this fight. This is tremendous, and now I get to just kind of kick back and enjoy fight weekend. They put on an incredible show here on Radio Row. I'm the last participant here on Radio Row tonight, as we were last night, which is all good. I'm looking forward to this fight. They rolled out the red carpet for us, and we thank them. Thanks to Tecate Beer as well, has been a big promoter of this fight, and we love all the imagery that they've put out there for us as well. A special thanks to Mitch Rosen, our program director, who said, "You want to go see a fight?" And I was like, "Yep, I sure do want to go see a fight." Special thanks to acting executive producer Shane Reardon, who is getting his first Vegas experience and fight night experience, and he is now free to do whatever he needs to do between now and the flight back home, and he doesn't have to worry about the responsibility of taking care of my dumbass. Thanks to the boys back at the ranch. You heard them putting the show together, and we appreciate the hard work. I've never worked with Sean Friedberg. I had no idea who this kid was until he, like, tweeted. And I said to Shane, I was like, "Who is this?" He's like, "He works at the station." I was like, "That's not good that I don't know him." But he did a good job today, so that's all I'm going to judge him on, the fact that he worked hard on my show and there weren't any problems. Eli Herskovich, we appreciate him and all of the hard work that he did on the show. I'm sure that he is sweating buckets right now, but he got the show, he landed the plane, and that's all we needed. We all applaud, yay, that he landed the plane without there being any problem. Have a great night. Watch this fight tomorrow. It's on HBO pay-per-view at 8 o'clock our time. You will enjoy it. I think this is a combat, and I am not going to wait. I am taking David Diaz's advice. On the money line, Chavez Jr., that might be the move. I'm going to do that. Have a great rest of your night. Have a great weekend. Enjoy Cinco de Mayo weekend. Do not get arrested. Back with our vet show Monday night, and I can't wait for that. It's going to be a blast. 6 o'clock Monday night on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.